Blair. Next guest is a cricket tragic. He loves his sport in general. He's a frequent visitor to Australia. He's one of Britain's best known and most respected food writers and critics. He is the son of the Duchess of Cornwall, Camilla Parker Bowles, which means he is the stepson of Prince Charles, who was greeting the Australian cricketers, of course, before the first test. And he's one of the judges for Channel 9's new cooking show, The Hot Plate, which is going to be launching very soon. It's great to welcome into the studio Tom Parker Bowles. Good to see you, Tom.
Cheers, Brett. Very nice to be here.
And Australia is a place that you've come many, many times.
I absolutely love Australia. It's got everything, got everything you want. You know, the people, the country, the food. Yeah, it's just the only problem with it, it's a little bit far away from the UK. That's so, the only problem with Australia.
It's a fair flight.
It is a fair flight, but you know, it's worth it. Easily worth it.
Absolutely. Before we get on to the show that you've been filming here in Australia, which is going to launch very soon, and we are a 24-hour sports station, I'm told you absolutely love your sport. You've come in here, we've just been talking off air about your love of cricket in particular, and I suppose growing up in England, I mean, cricket is very much part of society, isn't it? Whether it's the England team, the amount of county cricket, this is where it was born, and Lord's being no doubt the most historic and best cricket ground in the world.
There's something about Lord's, going to Lord's, but you know, Australia, the Ashes, nothing is better than the Ashes. Last night, 7:30, you know, and I thought, here we go again, 3 wickets down, hello. Down goes our captain, down goes, in comes the hero, Root. And that catch that Haddin missed, I mean, my heart was beating. He tonked, well, I think it's 133, I think he got.
Yep.
But we're now in a situation where I thought, I'm going to come in here and you're just going to do the usual Aussie over here.
Yeah.
And now I feel that we, you know, it might be a draw, this first one.
Well, it's an even first day, isn't it? I mean, a good day's test cricket, and that's what we want to see. That's become sort of modern cricket, hasn't it? That a team can, and probably Australia set the trend when they started having their great run under the captaincy of sort of Mark Taylor, Steve Waugh, is that once upon a time a test team would never make 300 or 400 in a day's cricket, but it's a bit of a given now.
And now, and it's not only a given, and it is that aggressive Australian style. And for me, thank the Lord that England have started being aggressive, because that very sort of conservative, boring style that Cook was doing a bit last year, and this time they're taking the game to you. And I love the fact that your fast attack is being slightly neutered by that flat old pitch. You know, you had to get it swinging because the big boys can't come and bung the balls down too fast, because it's a pitch at the moment in Cardiff to score runs on. We should have got more runs. If we get to 400, I feel that we're in a better position than we were at 9:30 last night.
Mm. Yeah, it's a fascinating series. I mean, Australia's not quite the invincible Australia they were many years ago, and England are trying to sort of get back. And it's funny, I looked at the England side on paper ahead of the first test. Alistair Cook obviously speaks for himself. Ian Bell's been in the team a long time. Joe Root, and a lot of players there who haven't been regular test players, but 343, decent total. Where did your love of cricket start? Tom, did you play?
I was rubbish at playing. We played it. It was a traditional game at school. So at boarding school and all the way through, it was a big, big game. And I was always very bad at it. But my grandma and my uncle were cricket fanatics, my cousins. So we grew up on, you know, in the UK, you look back to summers when you were young and they were always long and hot. And my grandma used to turn down the volume on the telly and have Test Match Special playing, because she didn't like the commentators on the telly, and she liked Brian Johnson and the rest of it. So we grew up with this love of cricket, and especially Test Matches, because she's, you know, Test Matches were the only thing there. And there was a danger not very long ago, the Test Match is over, it's too long. No, the Test Match is the most exciting form. I love 2020, look, don't get me wrong, but a great Test Match where it swings backwards. And I got married in 2005, and being English, of course, I'll talk about 2005 as this.
Do we have to? Yeah.
But I was on the day, it was the Oval. I got married on September 10th. And so we were at the Oval. It was the penultimate day of the last test. Everything on the line, you know, all equal. And we had to win it. And I was at the altar waiting for my wife and my best man, who's a cricket, and all my ushers had little radios in. And all the way through the service, they would say, fine, Freddie's done that, and we had it, and so I had the full thing, you know, and my wife didn't mind, she knew it was the Ashes. And that moment for any English cricket fan, and I know that you win all the time, you win World Cups, you're used to it, Australia, it was the one of the great sporting moments of English history.
So so when you were deciding to get married, and I actually had some people I know very closely who decided to get married right in the middle of the AFL finals here, which is just a no-no for people. And the whole time at the wedding, people are tuning into this prelim final. Were you, when you set your wedding date, were you thinking about the Ashes? And...
Well, I knew, obviously, it was the Ashes. I knew it would be the Oval. But we felt that, because, look, the Aussie team then, it was, you know, the great hero that is Warnie. And Warnie was the only one who, when he came out into the outfield, everyone, who ate all the pies? And he would turn around, he'd bow, and we loved him. We still love him. Warnie is the greatest spin bowler of all time. There's no question about that. But the Aussies, there was a strong side. Look at the legends in it. You know, it was...
We were pretty lucky.
And, so it was, you know, so we've grown up being dominated by Australia, so the occasional win we're allowed.
Now, your other sporting loves, Wimbledon's on at the moment, and I've been lucky to go there twice. It is just a spectacular place. We're getting to the business end of that. Tennis, how does that grab you?
Love tennis. I play it a little bit. I mean, obviously not very well. But, you know, it's quite nice. Murray having won, you know, Wimbledon at last. And he's looking quite strong at the moment. Of course, he's got Federer to come up. And, you know, Federer. You know, you never discount him. But you get the feeling that Federer's perhaps reached the top of his career. Mm. He can't, you know, he is one of the greats of the tennis game. But Murray's, you know, stopped that British tradition of being a bit rubbish. You know, we made a Tiger, Tim Henman. Great, probably a lovely fella and all the rest of it, but didn't, you know, occasionally he always made it to the quarterfinal.
He lost his hill, didn't he? Him and Hill became Murray Mount.
Murray Mount. But, you know, it's now Murray is a serious contender. He, you know, he's a fantastic tennis player, and it's quite nice to actually be. And of course, when he's winning, he's British, but when he's losing, he's Scottish, of course. So
can you give us an insight into that? Because we're always, we always think over here, obviously, you know, Great Britain. Made up of the different components of it, but give us your take on, you know, how does he look at himself, Andy Murray? I mean, obviously Dunblane, he was born, and
of course, yeah,
he is Scottish, but plays under the GB banner. How does that sort of sit with people?
Well, he like most Scotsmen, he's a proud Scotsman. So I would have thought, in fact, I'm pretty sure he's Scottish first, British second, just as a lot of English people, English first and British second. And occasionally he would, before a World Cup, he'd say anyone, like the classic Scottish view of England, anyone but England to win. Because there's this big rivalry between rugby and football and everything between Scotland and England. Always has been. The Scottish, you know, always getting cross with the English. So, of course, what the English say is, you know, when Murray's doing well, he's British, yay! But the moment he's not doing well, oh, Scottish, you know. But he's a fantastic sportsman, and he's got more sort of, he used to be quite grumpy. He's got more media savvy now.
Yeah, there's a few more smiles.
Yeah.
The PR team's just got into Andy and said, no, don't lose any of your competitiveness, live on the edge, but just smile occasionally. It doesn't hurt anyone, does it?
No. And, you know, to have a British person win Wimbledon, that was just magnificent, because, you know, it's like all things in Britain. Oh, we invented rugby, we invented cricket, whatever. And then we always managed to lose at them all the time. So it's quite nice occasionally to have a win.
You weren't born into royalty, but you obviously, you know, due to your mum marrying Prince Charles, you know, royalty's become a part of your life in a sense. Can you give us a bit of an insight just to our listeners?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still a commoner, you know, total. Although I've been born, I suppose I'm posh by all accounts, and I got born lucky, the lucky side of life, and went to all the nice schools and had lovely parents, had an idyllic childhood and all the rest of it. My mum married Prince Charles. She's happy, so you know you're always happy if your mum's happy, and that's great. But I think lots of people presume that I live in a palace and eat lark's tongues and anteaters' noses and all that sort of stuff. And you know, you might see my stepdad just as anyone else would see their stepdad when they go and see their mum, and he's a fantastic person, and so the rest of the family. But it's not to the point, you know, they're very much the royal family and they're doing their fantastic and wonderful job. Being that, we're you know, the sort of, the commoners in the thing. And I'd never dream of saying I'm royal family because I'm not.
Yep.
You know, my mum is, and she's coming out with Prince Charles to here in November to Australia for a tour.
Yep.
And she's been here once before and loves it. And also, she said to me, I spoke to her the other day, and my stepdad went to go and meet the Australian team. I saw it and I said, oh my God. Prince Charles has got to see the Australian team, what they like. And apparently, you get a set amount of time. But he absolutely loved the Australian team. He said it was just, they were the most charming. I said, look, are you sure?
Well, when he goes along and talks to all the cricketers, I'd love to be a fly on the wall as to what questions are being asked. And, you know, like, for example, how much would Prince Charles, how much would he know about the cricket or follow it?
he would know what was going on. He's very, very informed and very savvy and knows it. I don't think he's a completely obsessed cricket fan, but he'd certainly keep an eye on it. And he just said they were the most charming bunch of players. I say, no, the Aussies, you can't say that. You know, it's the Ashes, it's war.
When they were shaking hands.
But no, it was you know, he was there and it was in Cardiff and yep. It was great.
Some people think humans shouldn't eat maggots because they aren't always killed when they're eaten. In extreme cases, they could even tear holes in the intestine, causing vomiting, diarrhea and bleeding. But these maggots are much smaller than bluebottle ones.
Well, I did listen to this upstairs. Our special guest, Tom Parker Bowles, of course, one of Britain's best-known and most respected food writers and critics. Tom, I've got to ask you, Italian maggot cheese.
Casamarzu, it's a speciality in Sardinia where they get a cheese, quite a smelly cheese, and flies lay eggs in it. And it sort of matures it and it becomes maggot cheese. It's illegal for obvious reasons in most of Europe. But I was doing a bit for a Gordon Ramsay program called The F Word and had to go out there and eat this cheese. And I thought they were going to bury into my stomach and all the rest of it. It's actually quite nice cheese, to be honest.
Is that right?
Yeah, perfectly right.
I can't quite digest that, but I'll take your word for it. Tell us about the show, The Hot Plate. You've been out here filming for the last 3 months, coming up very soon on Channel 9.
It's a cooking program. There are a lot of cooking programs around, as you know, but this is different in the way that it's state versus state. So there are local restaurants of cooking Japanese food or French, Italian, modern Australian, fusion, and they're competing against each other. But the difference is that these are all successful local restaurants. It's not going back to Gordon Ramsay, me and Scott Pickett, who's a great Melbourne chef, running around saying you're rubbish and shouting and screaming. No, these are all successful in their own right. And they just want to step up a bit or refresh it. And also it's a $100,000 prize. So they're all fighting. We judge, but the other teams judge the other judges. I mean, judge the other teams as well. So we're traveling around Australia, different restaurants, different cuisines, and it's who is the best. So they start as good restaurants to begin with. And then, of course, we give them different, you know, as we go through, we drop teams. But it's very competitive. There are ups and downs, but there's some seriously good food on it.
And you've attributed your passion for food to your mum, Camilla Parker Bowles, and also Prince Charles. Take us back and where it all sort of started.
Well, I grew up in the country in the UK, and my mum was just a good cook of roasts and pies and all the stuff that we grew up on. So growing up in the country, there wasn't much. You didn't go to restaurants. You know, my dad was a good, we lived on a farm and my dad was a good gardener. So I got an idea of good food very young. I didn't think about it then, but looking back on it, I suppose that a lot of my love of food could come from the fact that everything was from the garden or from the farm. We just had a healthy, happy childhood eating good food. And then I was sent off to prep school, age 8, and that was rubbish, disgusting, sort of everything you've heard about English food. That's where it all starts, sort of grey gristly mince and eggs that smelt of fish, and it was just filth. And that changed a healthy appetite into a greed, and it all started there, I suppose.
You mentioned your fellow judge, Scott Pickett, who's been trying to get you into Australian rules football. You haven't been to a game yet, and I recommend you do. At some point, if you're going to be frequenting Australia, have you had a chance to actually look at it on the TV?
Scotty's been explaining it to me a lot, and we haven't had the chance to see it. But it's great. It's a fantastic game to watch. I still don't understand quite what's going on, and Scott will explain it in great detail. And I'll be yeah. But I suppose it's like explaining cricket test to the Americans. You know, you've got to grab the basics. But I'm desperate to go and see a game. So and Scotty is a mad keen footy fan.
Just off the SMS here, Matt in Mirrlebark, out in the suburbs, Tom, here of Melbourne. Have you got a football team, a UK football team at all?
I'm a Tottenham Hotspur fan, which means I'm used to failure. We're used to sitting just below the Champions League or even the Europa Cup. But actually, I live in West London now, so QPR, Queen's Park Rangers, our local side. So I'm going to get. They've just been relegated down into the Championship, so the season tickets will be quite cheap, and it's literally around the corner. So I'm going to get my boy into it, and so I can go and sit and watch the footy on a Saturday.
Been to a couple of games over there. That is a special pilgrimage to the ground, and just the rivalries and everyone having their own ground, something that we don't have here with the AFL teams. And I just want to get your take on Nick Kyrgios being a tennis fan, because he has made news here for the last 3 days. You can imagine he's polarised the Australian sporting public. What do you make of Nick Kyrgios?
Look, he's a talented player. I think that part of the point of being a sportsman at that level is you've got to learn to control your temper as well as your skills. So the talent's all there. I think it's just a question of perhaps going back and not being a bit, not chucking your toys out of the pram every time, because there are people who are younger than him who manage to, you know, keep it together. But what do I know? I sit and eat food for a living. This is pressure of the highest kind. The man's talented.
Yep.
You know, he slipped up. Big deal. Forgive him. Let's move on and see what he does from there.
Really appreciate spending a bit of time with you. Channel 9, The Hot Plate, it's coming up very, very soon. It's going to be a great series. You're going to be one of the judges along with Scott Pickett. Hope you've enjoyed your time in Australia and the Ashes. We're going to be a bit bleary-eyed. You'll be going back home and seeing it a little bit more prime time. And let's hope it goes down to the wire, because all Ashes series should come down to that final test, I reckon.
Oh, please, yeah. Thanks, Matt. Well, lovely to be on.
Thanks, Tom. Tom Parker-Bowles joining us, one of Britain's most respected food writers and a star of Channel 9's The Hot Plate.